I have to apologize to everyone because I didn't have my the right colors on last week, and that's why the defense screwed up. I mean, we can do all the analysis that we want to, but we know the real reason why they screwed up is because I was wearing the wrong colors.
That's right. That's right.
We got it straight today.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hey, Dave.
Good.
Morning, guys. Hey, how are you?
I was just telling them the reason why the defense didn't do so well last week is because I didn't have the right colors on.
Yeah.
I got my away jersey on today. So
there you go.
Nice. How's it going, fellas? Can you guys hear me?
Yep.
Yep.
Hey, fantastic. Fantastic. Who do we got on? Brian, Clint, Travis. Hey, Travis, were you on last week and had audio issues? You were on, weren't you?
Yeah, I had audio. Yeah, I was on and I had audio issues. I'm not on the Wi-Fi today though, so I should be okay. Just gotta use up my data.
hopefully it's worth it, right?
Yeah. And, of course.
Hey, Doug, man, is the Swedish translation working? Can you hear us?
It's on mute.
There, can you hear me now?
Hey, man, yeah. How's it going?
All right, there we go. All right, what's up, boys?
Fantastic.
Yeah,
no,
I only done this Zoom thing once with a bunch of cousins. It was a free-for-all. Well, I was just trying to log in. I had to update the whole app.
All right.
But here I am. Here I am.
Fantastic. Well, cool. Welcome. Hey, I think Doug, why don't you I did a little bit of an introduction for you. You're our Swedish correspondent, and this is actually the first time we've talked live, so that's awesome. Why don't you, everyone on the call last week sort of did just a real quick, just kind of introduction, and why don't you do that, and then we'll jump in and see what topics you guys have.
Sure, yeah. Originally from New York, just outside of Manhattan. I was born in Manhattan, but grew up about 30 minutes outside of Long Island. And I didn't go to Alabama. I met my wife there, was it 26, 27 years ago? She's Swedish. She brought me over here. And I've been here for 25 years, work at Volvo, the engine factory over here. So you see Volvos driving around. The engines come from my place.
Fantastic.
And you're wondering, well, how does a New Yorker end up being an Alabama fan? And that goes back to Ray Perkins, Giants fan. My family, not my father. My father's brother was good friends with Wellington Mara and all that stuff. And when Ray Perkins left to coach Alabama, I just kind of tagged along. But being in the Northeast, you know, not very easy to get college football except for what ABC gave you.
Right.
And we got six pro teams stretching from Boston down to Washington D.C. and everything else in between: baseball, hockey, basketball, whatever. So my Alabama history is a little spotty, been catching up. Of course, when I came over here, moved over here in 94, in the end of 94, then I was just it was just a black hole for everything. but here we are, modern technology, and you know, I'm all caught up pretty much. So it's good.
Fantastic. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So how far ahead are you, Doug? What's the time zone? What time is it over there right now?
It is 4 p.m.
or 5. Okay, so you're 6 hours. Okay, so the game tonight's coming on at 1:30 a.m.
Yeah, that's a challenge sometimes, as Dave knows. And, I'm up at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, waiting for kickoff. But I have to pick my moments, you know. Dave and I think we're the same age, right?
Yeah.
And exactly. And so, you know, if it's Alabama and, you know, UT Chattanooga or something like that. I don't know, but you know, Ole Miss or one of the big games. Yeah, I'm up for that. I'm up for that.
Hey, Brian, someone's coming at you again, man. Brian works at UTC.
Yeah, I heard that last week. Oh, I'm sorry. No offense. Hey, my best friend back at home, man. His wife went to UTC. So there you go.
Nice. Well, it's an easy one to sort of just reference, right? There's no mountains, right? We all know what it means.
We all exactly.
You need to stick with the Sisters of Mercy state, Dave.
There you go.
That's right. That's what we need to stick with.
Oh my goodness. I like not everyone likes this guy, and I appreciate that, but I like Colin Cowherd. He's funny. And I like, you know, he'll say stuff like, you know, roast beef tech or something, you know. It's like, I'm not going to offend anyone, but it's hilarious. And so I will sometimes use that one because that's pretty funny. But no, that's awesome. Hey, what do you guys think about the weather? You guys probably have a bunch of topics too. So let me just throw the, you know, sort of Ole Miss weather sort of on the table, and then you guys take us wherever we want to go in terms of discussion.
My question,
what do you think the weather? The weather, I think, here's my 2 cents, right? I think the weather hurts them more than it hurts us. It's going to be a sloppy game, more potential for turnovers. But it may be sort of the game we're looking for in terms of opening up the running lanes. And so it might not be fun to sit in the stands and watch it, but it might be a whole lot of fun to sit home on the TV and watch it. What do you guys think?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
How bad is the storm or the weather there?
I think it's supposed to be. I think it's supposed to be pretty bad. It's where they moved it back an hour and a half. I don't know what that's going to do necessarily, but I think sort of the heart of the hurricane is going to be, you know, in that part of Mississippi, you know, by kickoff this later this evening. So. I think
the wind is low, though.
4 and 8 inches over the course of the afternoon.
I looked at the hourly forecast. It's 6:30 Central time.
Yeah.
Central. Oh, 7:30. All right.
Yeah.
Eastern time. Okay.
But so I looked at the forecast. The hourly forecast says the wind's going to be about 25 miles an hour. So, like, not dangerous, but I don't know how you're going to pass in it.
Right.
You said 4 to 8 inches of rain?
Yeah. I saw, well, I mean, it's all sort of, you know, media hype, right? And so, and this was a couple of days ago when it's a, you know, the models are more, you know, more projected. So I don't know what they're saying now. And I don't know what it'll actually be, but.
Shoot, we get 12 inches a year.
I don't know if you remember that Georgia game from a couple of years back with Derrick Henry just ran all over Georgia in the middle of a torrential rain. That's what it's
washout.
Probably.
I was there. Yeah.
Yeah, and so whenever it rains, it's going to be like that because, I mean, I'm in Houston, Texas, and so we occasionally get these storms. But what I've noticed about tropical storms is that that rainfall is just, like, beyond anything I've ever imagined. It's not necessarily, like hard, like, but it's, like, the drops are so big and it comes down in so much volume at once. It's just unbelievable. But who knows? That wind, I mean, so the wind, if it's 25 sustained, it's like sticking your hand out the car window at 25 miles an hour.
Yeah.
That's what it's like. And so it's going to be, I don't know. I don't know how you're going to throw the ball in that.
It's going to be tough to pass in.
Yeah.
But you know what, Dave? I think that kind of goes into, I saw one of your topics with Trey Sanders, right? Because I think we've talked about that. And he was one of my guys along with John Metchie, the kid from Jersey.
Yeah.
And definitely, you know, probably I was thinking about that. You know, the weather probably plays into, you know, Trey Sanders maybe having a big game. Hopefully, if they give him some time or enough time, anyway.
Yeah, I think if you're Ole Miss, you know, you have to be excited about the offense. You have to be excited sort of about, you know, where the program's going. But that defense, you just have to hang your head. You know, Florida, you know, what did they throw for 400 or 500 yards? And then the very next week, Kentucky came out and had, you know, they rushed for over 400 and had three guys rush for over 300 or for over 100 each. And so, you know, if you're Ole Miss, you're like, you know, we can't stop. At least let us stop one, right? Can we stop one? And so far they've been unable to stop, you know, either. And so it might be interesting in a game like this where everyone's relegated to run. What does that do? Does that sort of allow some focus? I don't know, but I think that, I do think that the running game opens up this week. And Caleb, I know you had some interesting sort of findings or thoughts on that. But I think if we're looking at, you know, who's going to be the next guy to sort of break out. And if Trey Sanders, if he truly does have that extra burst, that extra pop that, you know, that we read about, then he's going to be someone with the starters, with sort of the, you know, game on the line, so to speak, that he's going to be able to pop a hole and be in that secondary pretty quick. That might be exciting to watch.
I agree.
Yeah, I'll look forward to that. I got no problems with that at all.
I have a sneaking suspicion that our run game is a lot better than we've showcased so far, and that, you know, the teams that we've played have kind of played, you know, eight in the box and kind of shut down the run, and, you know, that's opened up the passing attack. And so we might be looking at, honestly, an offense that's as balanced as we've had. That's what I hope to see.
Yeah, I kind of lean that way, but, you know, Caleb, you've done some film study this week, and sent, you know, sent me an email, sort of break down, kind of what you did and maybe what your working theory is, two weeks in.
Yeah. Why don't I just show it to you? This is real rough. This is real rough. I'd kind of heard that narrative that teams were, I don't know the exact phrase, because it wasn't necessarily loading the box, but it was basically, hey, Alabama offense is taking what the defense has given them, insinuating that teams are disproportionately dedicating resources to stopping the run, which usually means loading the box. Sometimes, I know Saban mentioned A&M was doing some unique, like, run rushing patterns. I don't remember the exact terms he used, but think of stunts and things like that. So I'm not capturing that necessarily. I mean, I'm not an expert, so I don't even know how to look for all that. But basically, I just mapped out all of the major runs throughout the game. I eliminated things like Max sack. Bryce Young had a bobbled snap, so that left me with kind of 25 carries. And I just captured a few things. It's not perfect across the board here, but when in the game was it happening? What was the score at the time of the play? Down and distance, where was it on the field? I wanted to know, too, if we had rotated out any starters. And then this is really the big one I was trying to measure, is number of defenders in the box, right, to get at that resource. Dedication piece, that narrative. What formation were we in? What direction did we run in? Again, that's a little bit imperfect if, you know, Najee had to bounce out but I tried to capture it with the intention of the play, the direction. Mm-hmm. Who carried it, how far it went, and any additional notes, like how many tight ends are in the set? Did we pull a guard or a center? That type of thing. So the major thing, a few things stood out to me. You know, one, it didn't feel like A&M was necessarily stacking the box. Some of that's hard to read because especially when we have a two tight end set and one is really like split in the slot. You know, if we had like a nickelback, for example, up at the line of scrimmage, they're really outside of the box, but that's a little bit flexible. But the point is, I think the average is about six guys in the box on a typical play. So if we're playing predominantly a one or two tight end set, that's really hat on hat. So to me, it felt more like we're just not getting the job done at the point of attack. And the other thing I noticed is we didn't have a run of over 6 yards until the fourth quarter. And all five of our best runs were actually in the fourth quarter. And none of them were Najee. So that's at that point, we had pulled a couple of starters and Brian Robinson was just eaten. At that point, we had worn him down. So that's like high level. The main crux was, did they actually load the box or did we just not get a hat on a hat very well? It felt to me like the latter, but that's just my opinion, I guess.
No, I thought the same thing too.
Interesting.
Yeah. I thought that the run game could have been better, and the line just wasn't really gelled, if we could say that, you know.
And Caleb, you broke down the full game, right? Is that right?
Right. Yep.
Fantastic.
Just the rushing plays from our side that were not like fumbles or sacks kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay. So what you did is you inspired me a little bit. I got this last night and I was like, oh wow, this is a lot of work. I need to sort of understand this and sort of think this through. So I woke up this morning, I got my trusty cup of coffee and very low tech. I have a post-it note.
Yes.
So I sat down and I said, well, I can't watch all of this, but I can watch a little bit of it. And let's take a look and let's see what, you know, what I found. And so here's what I've got. And I did, you know, most of the first quarter. So, you know, take it for what it is. Right. And so what I counted and so some of this will sound like it's disagreeing with you, but the net is, I think there's some common ground here. So when I looked at the first run, which was Alabama's first offensive play, I counted eight in the box. And I counted anything that was sort of, you know, if they're lined up the outside foot of the outside, you know, lineman or tight end, and then sort of, you know, 5 yards back sort of end to end. So that's how I sort of counted the box. And so in the first play, I counted eight in the box, but I counted 11, all 11 inside 10 yards. And so now you think the corners on the side, you know, they're going to line up. So they almost don't count. But what really counts is what are they doing with their safeties? And their safeties were at 9 yards. So outside of the box, but, you know, stacked on top of the box, as opposed to, you know, 12 or 15 yards back. And so it's a subtle difference, but, you know, if you have the safety, you know, 10, 9, sort of cheating in, 8, then not box, but schematically they're focusing on the run first. If he's, you know, 10, 12 yards back and you see some sort of lean back, then schematically, you know, they're doing something, you know, first check with the safeties is a little something different. So that's something that I was looking for. But that was, like you said, one of our better runs. I think the first run of the game was 6 yards. And it was a linebacker and safety that made the tackle. I thought that was a really good run. The second, so I got to look at my notes. The second run, they did have 7 in the box. I counted 11 all within, you know, 10 yards. Sometimes you can't see the secondary players on the TV screen, right? And so when you can see them all 11 in the TV screen, you know that they're cheated in a little bit, but they were all within, you know, the 10 yards. Landon Dickerson, I think, just tripped over a blade of grass. I really think that there was almost a Red Sea, split of the Red Sea right in the middle. There were two defenders, and we had Landon was gonna pick up one, and looked like Forrestall was gonna get the other. The Carl Tucker was downfield blocking. Leatherwood was downfield blocking, and so it looked like we're gonna, you know, cut through the line and then sort of run left, and even Alex was blocking, and he looked up like, where's the play, you know, where's the running back, because we blocked this really well. And what happened is it looked like Landon just tripped over a blade of grass, and so he was down. He didn't block his man. And then Forrestall got in the hole, and there were two guys coming at him. And so he wasn't going to be able to block. And about that time, they just crashed the line of scrimmage. So I do think that was a bad play. I think there was a lot of yards to be had there if Landon had kept his foot and made the play. The third run, they had 6 in the box. so that was a much lighter box. They had 10 inside the 10. It looked like there was one safety that maybe was a little bit deeper from what I can see. This was a 1st and 10 play, and they did do a couple things that I think just sort of threw us for a loop on this one. I think they did run a defensive tackle twist. I think Ekior went after the wrong man, and so, you know, the guard, and you've got the two tackles, you know, they ran a twist. And so if Ekior had more, you know, call it a zone block scheme, if he had just stood his ground and just blocked whoever, you know, crossed his face, and Landon did the same thing, then they just would have picked up the stunt, right? Whoever comes to me, I'm going to block him. But what Ekior did is follow his man, which allowed the looping guy to come back around him. And then the hole that opened up with the stunt, Landon just walked into it and was like, almost like looking for who to block. And the guy that looped around was unblocked, and he participated in the tackle. That's one thing that happened at the line of scrimmage, and so that's clearly something we've got to clean up. And it looks like Leatherwood on the left side, it looks like Leatherwood blocked, looks like he was expecting some tight end help, and he blocked, and it was going to be sort of almost a stunt blocking where Forrestall had lined up outside and was going to come around and sort of clip. And what that was going to allow is Alex to chip and then go out and block downfield. That's what it looked like. But in effect, Alex got beat because he didn't have any inside help. And he, you know, as far as you can tell on the camera, he kind of looked surprised. But that we got to clean that up. That was just sloppy. And then what's interesting is it was 3rd and 3 at the 6. This is the first touchdown, or the second touchdown, first rushing touchdown. And I thought, well, I'm not going to evaluate this because this is not fair. They're going to stack the box here. But I looked at it anyways, and they did have 9 in the box. They had all 11 inside the 10, which you would expect. It's a goal line situation. They, you know, we had 21 personnel. We put a man in motion. but the blocking was phenomenal. And Najee went in, you know, virtually untouched. And so I think, I didn't look nearly as many plays. I think a couple of things. I think Texas A&M, I do think their intention was, you know, run first. You know, the safeties just outside the box, sort of leaning forward. But the misses that I saw were execution, which I think is really the point you're making, Caleb, is that it's execution. And so I think that on the goal line, where it's a limited field, a limited responsibility set, maybe, we kicked ass. And, you know, different places in the field where the responsibility set was maybe a little bit different, we struggled. And so I think we've got to clean that up. I don't think, and this is your conclusion, and I agree with it, I don't think we just excuse it as we're going to face a team that's not dedicated to the run and we're going to blow them off the ball and kick everyone's, you know, sort of tail. I think we need to execute with what we line up against, because there were yards on the field against A&M that we could have had very early in the game. Again, I just barely got through the first quarter. Lots of yards on the field just on the plays that I saw.
Yeah, I think so. A couple of conclusions from that. I would trust your film study over mine. I guess part of the distinction there is who we're considering in the box. And so traditionally, I just thought about that as, you know, equal to or inside the tackles within, you know, 3 to 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. But I understand your larger point, creeping up safety is able to fill the gaps. And then like the nickelback, if it's over the tight end and the tight end is really in run support, I mean, really that's a guy in the box, and I may have not considered that. So I take that point. That makes sense. What, you know, one thing that comes out of that, a question for me, I guess, to the group that I don't really understand is our seeming overcommitment to Forrestall. It seems like in most of our one tight end sets, he's almost exclusively the guy. And I know we're rotating in like five guys at the position, but he's not really involved to this point in the passing game. And I think he's a pretty bad blocker, honestly, especially on like counters where maybe we're like pulling a guard and he's backfilling. It feels like he misses that every time. And I don't know if that's just, I'm just seeing the bad plays and the good plays I don't see, so I forget, but it just feels like more often than not, he's like whipped at the point of attack when he's blocking. Am I crazy there?
What do you guys think?
I haven't noticed it. I think he made a heck of a good catch early in the first quarter, but I agree with you. He didn't. He's probably just like one of those Saban things where, you know, he's been around for a long time and you can trust him not to do anything bonehead.
I think that was said with many fewer words than I would have done. I think what's interesting is, you know, Forrestall is one of those guys that he was a receiving. It's funny when tight ends come in and then how Saban categorizes them versus sort of what their high school career was. And so Forrestall, and this is a bar bet right here. Forrestall was a high school quarterback up until his junior year. And then he lost his job to Trevor Lawrence, you know, and so he wanted, you know, and so he moved over to tight end. And so, but if you just take that, you think from an athleticism standpoint, he's not, you know, a lineman type tight end. He's not a blocker type tight end. And in high school, he was a pass catcher. And so he comes to Alabama and Saban starts talking about him. Well, he's primarily a blocker. And I was like, oh, that's interesting, because that's not what he is. that's not who he has been. And so, but I think to Saban, every tight end's a primary blocker. I think, you know, we need to sort of factor that in. But he's not, you know, I mean, he's good, but, you know, he's a poor man's, you know, Brian Vogler. And he's not, you know, an Irv Smith, right? And so I think it's right. Saban likes to set his floor, and with Forrestall, especially given the rest of the tight ends, he knows what his floor is. He knows, you know, predictably what he's going to get. You would think, you know, for all the talk around Alabama ought to be able to get a kicker. Well, I agree with that. Alabama ought to be able to get a kick-ass tight end. And we have in spots, you know, OJ was really good. I don't know that we used him as well as we could have. Irv Smith's probably my favorite tight end that we've had. And then you look at some of the other guys, we ought to have them lined up, and we don't. And it does feel like Saban has a type at tight end. He likes those 6'7" white guys. I don't, you know, it just is, right? So look at the track record, right? And it's Colin Peak, and it's Vogler, it's Forrestall, it's Tennyson, it's that, you know, you can sort of line them up. So I don't know. He's not my favorite player. I hate to say that, but that's probably true. And it seems like, man, if Carl Tucker would just, it just, to me, it feels like, man, what is he missing? Let's get him that. And then we're going to have sort of a kick-ass tight end, but I don't know. We'll see how the season unfolds.
Cause that's my thing. Like if they're not heavily involved in the passing game anyway, then what's the risk in rotating in a Tennyson or a Tucker or even a Billingsley? I know his bill is not to block, but I don't know. I've just been more disappointed than not with Miller in a purely, you know, run blocking role. So yeah. I just don't get why we don't rotate more on a single tight end set. I see Carl Tucker in there a lot with him on a two tight end set, particularly in first halves. But I'm with you. I don't know if like Carl's just missing something and that's the floor you're talking about. It's just too low for Saban's level of comfort, but it just seemed a little weird to me.
Yeah. I think that's going to be a watch item. Does Carl Tucker, you know, cause he didn't have spring. And so whatever sort of fall he had, do we get, you know, and this is week three, right? So do we get to week six and then we just notice that his role is expanded? I think there's, you know, I'm still holding out kind of hope for that. I want somebody to be the next Irv Smith, and I want it to be Carl Tucker because, you know, come in and save the day sort of deal. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I do think we probably see more, more of him. But I just think Forrestall, Saban's so comfortable with him. He can block and he can also, you know, peel out and catch some passes. And that pass that he caught, I mean, he caught two against A&M, that one that he caught where he sort of went up twisting, that, you know, that earns him three more starts, right? Because, you know, you can be serviceable as a blocker and you can do that, which is going to draw someone in coverage. So I don't know.
Yeah. Can I just jump in on that?
Yeah. Please.
If I can. Sure. Yeah, because actually you just kind of alluded to it there, because my whole view about Miller Forrestall and then what Caleb was talking about, like, why don't they rotate more? And, you know, what comes to my mind is that, you know, he's the proven product and, you know, he's got the experience. And like Dave was just saying, was just going through my own mind, and that he's not the best blocker. We know that, you know, they even say so on television. But he is pretty reliable when he goes out. I mean, if I'm going real far back here, probably nobody remembers him, but Zeke Mowat, he was a tight end for the Giants back in the day, and he wasn't the best, he wasn't the worst, but he was reliable. You could count on him, and that's kind of the way I see. That's kind of the way I see Forrestall, and the other guys don't have the same experience that he does. I mean, Forrestall seems like he's just one of those guys, kind of like what Hunter Renfrow. Yeah. You know, oh my God, is he still there? He must be like the 38 and he hasn't graduated yet. You know, so that's just the way I look at him. You know, he's just a proven product and you can pretty much trust him.
Yep. What other thoughts or questions are out there?
On the offensive side of things, I mean, when we were – I mean, it's sort of, I think, still speaking to the Texas A&M defense, but our – I mean, Mechie and some of those guys were wide open. I mean, I think Mac did great, but I think in some of those cases – and our receivers, receiving corps, elite, but some of those coverages, to me, was speaking to something that they weren't adequately covering our receivers, because it wasn't like – they're not that good. Let's put it that way. I mean, Mechie was like 20 yards ahead of the guy. And is, yep. I mean, maybe not that much, but, you know, it was not that, I don't think they had enough over the top protection from their safeties. I think their safeties must've been doing something else.
Yeah. I mean, even Gary Danielson called out one of those plays, right? Where one of Mechie's bombs, the corner was playing whatever they call it, outside technique, I guess, thinking he had, or acting as if he had safety help over the top when he didn't. So Mechie, I don't even know if it was a double move. I mean, it looked like just a post a couple of times, just broke wide open. So I agree with you,
Clint. Yeah, I think they said the safety didn't move off the hash or something like that. Yeah, no, it was, because that's a question that I have too. And that is, it's almost it's almost too bad that it's going to be bad weather down there in Oxford, because, you know, we all know that Ole Miss's defense is not good, but particularly they got real problems on the back end, and we could really have a big day with the long ball and all that. But I also kind of wonder, is, you know, as far as Mac Jones, and I really like Mac Jones, this is nothing against him at all, but it is, you know, you kind of wonder exactly how good is he. I mean, obviously he's good, but with those toys that he's got, and you get some of those coverages that are a little suspect, and they can't cover everybody, it's just like, well, you know, I don't want to sound too brash, but gee, could I go out there and throw a few balls and look pretty good, you know? So it, I don't know. It's just a thought.
I think that's spot on, and I think that and this is where sort of, you know, it's a connective tissue between, you know, the stopping the run and allowing the pass, right? And so and Caleb, you said exactly, you know, where my head was going, even to sort of quote, you know, Blackledge, you know, they were pulling their safeties in the box, and you know, we saw that. And then you're right, if you're going to play outside technique, then you have just the belly of the center of the field is wide open. And so if you're going to pull your safeties in, then you got to play outside technique and use, you know, the sideline as a teammate, right? And create a smaller window for the quarterback to throw it into. When you're going to give the whole center of the field, you can just throw it up and you know, to your point, you know, Doug, anybody can sort of run under it. And so how good is he on some of those plays? It's a fair question. I think we've seen him stand in the pocket, take it on the chin.
Oh yeah.
But, you know, some balls, you know, and so on some of those plays, I think you're right. You know, I don't know that I could throw it that far, but conceptually I could do that.
Exactly.
Some of the plays he's doing, I can't do that.
Yeah. No question about it. I mean, he stands in there. I mean, he's not shy. You know, he doesn't get happy feet or anything like that. And, you know, I give him all the credit in the world for that. But, you know, it's always the same thing. I mean, you can draw a parallel, you know, the Chicago Bulls with Jordan and Pippen and those guys. You know, well, how good was Phil Knight as a coach? Or not Phil Knight, Phil Jackson.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I could have gone out there, you know, to the plate coach, and it would have gotten the same results. So, you know, I don't know. It's just an interesting thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't mean it to sound too, you know, critical. I hope it doesn't. But
I think it's fair. I will say, in his defense, we've probably won national championships with much less. So, I think he's definitely serviceable. I mean,
his
completion percentage is enough to kind of say we can work with something like that.
I'm gonna channel my inner Tommy, and I'm gonna say, you know, one of the things that I think points to Mac actually being pretty good is we've had quarterbacks, and Tommy would probably name, you know, Sims and maybe Coker, but Jalen, you know, you have that wide open field and the receivers are able to just run under the ball rather than run into the open field and stop and wait for the ball, which allows the defender, you know, to kind of come back. And so that may be a harsh, you know, metric, but that's something to look for. That's something to look for too. So that comment brought to you by Tommy, who's not here today.
Actually, when you were saying that, Jake Coker just popped right into my head.
Yeah.
Because he was that type of guy. And oddly enough, I thought about it yesterday, you know, Jake Coker really established himself at this game against Ole Miss. Remember, it was that, and I was up until, I think it was 5:30 in the morning. I mean, that game lasted forever.
Yes.
And if you remember, I think, you know, balls popping off of guys' helmets and just like, oh.
Yeah. We lost your audio. Hey, Clint, say something.
Hey, can you hear me?
I
get an echo, but I can't hear Doug.
Hear me?
Yeah. I can't hear you, Doug.
it'll relieve.
Who put him on mute?
Right in the middle. That's terrible.
I know. Hey, what about hey Nick? Are you at a place where you can do audio?
So one of the questions I had, Dave, is our defense didn't look like it set the edge at all. Maybe that's being a bit harsh. There was so many plays where they got around the end and they shouldn't have.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think I agree with you on that. I haven't sort of broken that down. Christopher Allen, I'm sort of mixed on him. I know he played, you know, early and looked like he might sort of grow into something. You know, unfortunately, he had an injury, and then, you know, coming back from, injury, it seems like it's never sort of connected to the original promise that I thought he had. And I know he's a four-star, highly thought of. I just haven't seen it, on the field. And I don't know if it's still injury related, if it's time away, related, but it just seems like he's going to be beat out before, we get too much further into the season, because setting the edge is such a, you got to do that. That's so critical. I remember, it's the stupid Cam Newton game where, we could put a phone booth out there just to set the edge and we probably would have, win that game. But we've guys, Chavis Williams and there's another guy I can't remember. And it just seemed like whatever they baited the hook with to sort of get, him sucked in, he was all about it. And those outside rushes, especially with the running quarterback, you got to set that edge. So yeah, I look for either we're going to see improvement there or we're going to see another player there, I guess is my prediction.
Some of it might've been their offensive line. I saw a couple plays that, I didn't do the film study or whatever, but I saw a couple plays where they beautifully, pulled a guard and hit the edge man and created a spot for him. But, I just think
Chris Allen standing up to that, a pulling guard. I don't see Chris Allen standing up to that, very well either. Yeah. I think that's
it. I had another defensive question for you, Dave, and it's not super well thought out, I guess, but what drives me crazy, I don't feel like a wide receiver has really beaten us yet in coverage, but these tight ends and running backs are driving me insane on wheel routes and whatever they want to do, honestly, it feels like. So, again, this isn't a really well-thought-out question. It's probably a dumb question, but it seems like generally in a traditional defense, a linebacker is going to match up with whoever's in the backfield, which is usually a running back, right? And a tight end, it's similar. It could be a safety. But what is really the risk of just going straight dime and putting a almost like someone in the money spot, but really just walking them up almost to the line of scrimmage and just sticking them on the guy? I get that in that example, you're either pulling Dylan Moses or Christian Harris out of the game, I guess. And so back to the floor and like the puzzle pieces and saying, well, DeMarco Hellams, his worse is worse than Christian Harris's worse. So for that reason, we're going to leave Christian in there, but it just feels like we should be more aggressive about taking that away. Cause if I was playing Alabama, I'd run 12 wheel routes to a gadget back until it hit, cause it's going to eventually. So is that reasonable or is that unreasonable for reasons I'm not thinking?
So, just kind of off the cuff thinking, there are a couple things. The A&M running back, Aeneas Williams, that had such a great day. He was a wide receiver last year, a legit, wide receiver last year. And so if you think about the concept of we're going to put a linebacker on the back out of the backfield. Okay. I could, I can follow that. But when the running back really is a wide receiver, then what you've got is a linebacker on a wide receiver. Boom, there's your mismatch. Right. And so I think that's a little bit the wheel route against Missouri, that was Drew Sanders out of position. And so that was more an error than it was sort of systematically we're playing it incorrectly. And then maybe the third point, and you guys jump in because you guys have, better opinions on this than I do, but the tight end, especially when you have again, A&M, man, can we get some of their tight ends? Because that dude is he's all that you want in a tight end. He's like a big ass player that can, that can sit down and block at the point of attack, but then he can get out and leak into coverage. And so what you find is when you sort of get the perfect tight end like that, they're too big for a safety or a corner to block, because they can just go up and get the ball and they can outbody them. You know, think of a guard versus a power forward in the low post, right? You have that type of matchup. But then you can't put a center on the power forward because he's gonna blow right past him. He's gonna have, and so you have that type of almost inherent mismatch because that's how God made this person, you know. And so how do you account, you know, how do you account for that? And you know, on any given play, you could say, well, had we done that, and that's fair. On a couple of those plays, hell, if we had just lined up and covered them, you know, that would have been sufficient. So I don't know. Those are thoughts. I don't know if any of that is an answer, but what do some of you other guys think?
Yeah, I think that's it. I think it's nothing wrong with it necessarily, but it would be always kind of a tricky kind of thing. Cause if you schemed it up, then it would be, like you said, it'd be easy for the offense to scheme back around it. So yeah, it's probably a good idea to work it in there as a part of dime packages and and things like that. But if you were always consistently that way, then the offensive coordinator would react to it.
I think you have to mix it up so play to play, they don't know what the coverage is, so they can't call a couple plays ahead. But then you get that becomes sort of a mouse game too, because you take a player like that. And not all tight ends are that good or that capable. Certainly A&M had one. It's looking like this Ole Miss tight end is going to be pretty good. He's a grad transfer from Temple. And I don't know if it was just the Kentucky defense, you know, being bad, but he looked like, man, he had some clear shots at some passes. And he sort of jumped out to me because, you know, to your point, Caleb, oh, geez, that's that position that gives us trouble this year.
And Georgia's guy, I mean, he's bigger than all the offensive linemen out there. Number zero, yeah. Darnell Washington. I wanted him so bad out of Las Vegas.
Yes, yes.
Terrifying over the seam. You know, I'm not looking forward to that.
Would have think that we were hot on him in recruiting, and then, you know, the kid that's down at LSU is you know, Gilbert, playing really well. And you think, why can't we get one of those guys?
And Dave, he was right in our backyard. I mean, yeah. Marietta High School, right? He's right down the street. Yep. So, yeah, I would have loved to have had him.
And you think, like, last year, tight end was a known weakness. Mm-hmm. And so if you're the stud, you know, high school tight end, I'm going to step right in at Alabama and be given an opportunity because, I've seen what they can do with an Irv Smith, right? And it's like the template is right there. The position almost recruits itself. How do we not get someone? I don't know. But I guess Carl Tucker said, okay, I'll take some of that.
Exactly.
I don't know. What do you
Doug,
guys think?
If you're trying to talk, we still can't hear you, Doug. Sorry.
Man. I know Doug's full of stuff he wants to share too. So if,
maybe he can, maybe,
you
maybe
can hold up paper in a minute. Like,
so Doug, maybe get out and get back in. Maybe that'll do it.
Yeah.
We're calling on a phone, another device or something, maybe.
Yeah, that's another option. Like exit the meeting and then get back in. That sometimes can. Because I don't think it's as normal to have your audio gone like that.
Right.
I think something's jacked.
Hey, Nick, I know you indicated that you're not in a place where you have audio. Definitely want to welcome you aboard. And Travis, you may not be in a place where you can do audio too, but happy to hear any feedback or questions or thoughts from you if you are. I know we get going, especially me. I just get to talking. And so you guys jump in, stop me.
I love hearing the insights. I'm trying not to dominate myself.
No, it's all good.
You just get passionate about it, you know?
No, it's all good. It's all
good. No, I like to hear it. I mean, Caleb, that was excellent analysis. Yeah, I like that absolutely. Data. Data is always – you need to do that every week, man.
Yeah.
I was able to fit it in. Like I said, with 4 kids under 9, it's not the priority, but I'm a nerd. I mean, that's what I do in my day job. I'm a data engineer. So
right.
That's why I like to hear people who kind of have either both or are all film study. They're all X's and O's because you want data informed insights. You don't want data only insights and decisions. There's a combination there. So
it's the return of Doug. You're on mute right now, Doug. Say something.
Yeah, he did. We still can't hear him.
Oh, damn it. All right. What do you guys think about and again, I'm not trying to dominate conversation. I'm going to throw this on the table and you guys take it wherever. What do you guys think about some of the other games in the SEC this week? I think the, you know, Georgia, Tennessee, is that Tennessee line for real? Is Georgia going to be caught looking ahead? I think that's an interesting storyline. Arkansas and Auburn is going to be more interesting than I ever would have given it credit for. It almost is like they're playing for the soul of Auburn. So that might be a fun keep an eye on that. And then Florida and Texas A&M. The last thing I want to say is sort of Jimbo on the hot seat. And I think most Texas A&M fans don't subscribe to that. And we heard my buddy Chad, you know, talk about that a little bit, but it feels like they expected a lot more out of this season. And if they drop an ugly game to Florida, which, you know, Florida in their own right is a good team, and then, you know, the week after playing Alabama, it's almost like two strikes against them. Like the first quarter of that game might be interesting, but that one could get ugly early. What do you guys think?
I think A&M's going to win straight up.
Gauntlet laid. Talk to me.
So A&M, I feel like I think at the line of scrimmage, they're much improved under Jimbo, particularly at the defensive line. Like, I remember playing them with Derrick Henry, 2013, 14, 15, 16, right in there. We just – every first and second drive, we just bust like a 75-yarder and the game was over. You know what I mean? So they've kind of eliminated that. So I like their ability to slow Florida somewhat, because I think they're going to get rid of some of those huge plays they gave up to us, particularly at home. That's a big part of my bent, is I think being at home is going to aid them in a bounce back. And I think Florida's defense is very suspect, right? So Jimbo, being the offensive guy he is going to be able to exploit a lot of those weaknesses. So I think it's at least going to be close. And when it's close at home in an in-conference game, I'm going to take the home dog. That's my thought.
All right. All right. Let's see how that plays out. And we might go to Vegas.
I don't know. How are they going to handle that Kyle Pitts guy? I mean, I think he's going to add a couple of touchdowns to the situation.
I don't think it's going to be a blowout. They'll be scoring. It might be like a 37-34 kind of game for sure.
No, but I like. So the couple of things that I agree with you on that is that, you know, Kellen Mond had a remarkable improvement from week one to week two. I mean, remarkable. I mean, he didn't make any turnovers. He didn't, like, you know, or I guess he threw a pick six, but I mean, he didn't make the egregious, like, you know, dropping the ball on the ground and stuff like that. So he was a lot better and more controlled against us than. And so, like you said, I think that's going to help out, you know, playing in a familiar place. And then, you know, the defensive line is better for sure. Yeah.
That's interesting. So let me ask this question. I'm almost embarrassed to ask, because tight ends give us problems, right? And so I shouldn't be the one asking this question, but is Florida a tight end offense? I mean, are they, you know, if we can decode the tight end, is Florida an easy beat? That feels silly to say, but I mean, somebody check me.
Remains to be seen, but I kind of see where you're going with that.
Yeah.
It feels like, again, I haven't done in-depth film study on Florida or anything, but it feels like Pitts is just, they keep saying this, an oversized wide receiver. He's like lining up in the tight end position, but I don't know what he's like in run support. So, again, if we just purely play to his pass catching ability, we may not line up with the linebacker on him. We may just pull the safety up right from the get-go, because we're not going to have to worry about handling him at the point of attack when they're running the ball. So maybe so. He's probably more solvable than an A&M tight end who's just – a do-it-all, you know, Madden 99 rating feeling kind of guy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's fair, because, you know, the A&M guy, you might not know what to do with him. And you exactly. Don't lock on man-to-man, a safety and then take that guy away from the defense. Whereas, you know, Kyle Pitts, you're right. That's interesting. So, I don't know. We have time to figure that out. And depending upon how the East goes, we might not need to. So, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
But that you are asking Georgia, Tennessee, and Arkansas, yeah. Auburn, right? Auburn, man, I don't know what they're doing on offense. I can never predict how they're going to come out, but they definitely feel flat. So I think they're at home as well, though, right? Isn't that one on the Plains?
I don't know.
No, I don't know.
I think it is. So I always think of a bounce back after a blowout loss with the team on the road. They go back home. I always expect them to play better. And then Georgia, Tennessee, I really don't know. That Tennessee middle linebacker, we were chasing Toto, whatever his name is. Yeah. He's impressive. I don't know if he's enough. I don't know what Tennessee's D line is like. Another offensive line is quite good, but they got to take away the run first and see. I still don't know who Stetson Bennett really is. I don't know if he's a good player or not. I mean, he's managed these games pretty well, but I'm not convinced by any means. So if they take away the run game, they might have a real shot in the second half.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I spent a good portion of, and I don't know that we ever brought this up in, on the podcast, but I spent a good portion of last season watching Tennessee highlights, just sort of cursing at the TV because we're struggling at middle linebacker, and Toa was just, you know, doing all the things that he did. And it's like, man, he could be doing all that stuff for Alabama and mm-hmm. you know, competing for titles this year. But so I don't know. Interesting stuff.
I think Mississippi State, Kentucky, I thought Mississippi State being an underdog was kind of a weird line.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting game.
I think Kentucky's got some sort of issues going on. I mean, if it's a shootout, which I expect it to be, it, you know, Mississippi State's certainly favored.
I think so, too. It's almost like, you know, Mississippi State, it's, you know, there's not as good as they're good and they're not as bad as they're bad. And so it's, we're still like trying to triangulate on, you know, cause the swing was so much, right. You know, Alabama's like, yeah, we're kind of somewhere in this box, and Mississippi State is like, I have no idea.
Well, their success is so system dependent. So yeah. I know there was some commentary this week around what Arkansas implemented defensively was what Washington did for 5 or 6 years against Leach. And yeah. they just took them out of their system every year. So it's all built on 5-yard passes, right, this air raid. And I didn't watch the game, so I don't know schematically what Arkansas did to take it away. But it seems like there's a solution there, and there's no backup plan in that system. You can't just line up in the I formation then and totally, you know, whatever, run a veer, wishbone. Like, it is what it is. Whereas if you get a multi-dimensional, you know, versatile offense – it's harder to take away everything, but with them, it just seems it's a little bit gimmicky. I don't know how long it's going to last. Maybe just a week. I don't know.
Well, it may be so, right? Because if you know, no disrespect to Arkansas and Sam Pittman. However, if Sam Pittman and Arkansas's personnel can you know, shut down what they did against, you know, LSU, then, you know, that might be a template that other teams can improve upon. So yeah, that'll be interesting.
Is my audio back on?
Yes.
I'm back. Okay. All right. Change the headphones. Yeah, no, I was just listening about, and I think Clint was in, I think you said that you were kind of surprised that Mississippi State were underdogs.
Yeah.
Was that? Yeah, because the first thing popped in my mind is that Vegas or the public, they just don't trust them.
Yeah. Right.
You know, that somehow that big win over LSU was just somewhat of an anomaly. And I forgot what they did last week.
Laid an egg.
They did, right?
Right. I think the funniest thing I heard was on somebody said that in week one, they ended the nation's longest winning streak. And in week two, they ended the SEC's longest losing streak.
Yeah.
So they, you know,
yeah.
They beat one of the best teams and lost to one of the worst.
One of the worst, yeah. Holy cow. No, that's true. And, you know, it's for LSU, it's hard to say it's all, you know, Derek Stingley, although, you know, one player can make a, you know, an outsized difference, but not that big of a difference. I don't believe that was all of it, but, you know, there's definitely some fair share there. And LSU lost so many players that they probably lined up really not knowing sort of who they were. And they were probably very fortunate they had Vanderbilt in week two. You know, you can go to Nashville and find yourself.
That's right.
So, yeah, I mean, that, you know, that's kind of the unfortunate thing because well, I'm kind of, you know, obviously I'm happy that Alabama's playing again, but college football in general, I'm kind of, I want to say I'm 75% paying attention to because you're kind of sitting on pins and needles. You don't know if you're actually going to play next week.
Right.
And you just have all these anomalies that really are affecting, and LSU is one of them. I mean, you know, when we play LSU, I know they lost a good number of guys to the draft, but you also had a fair number that dropped, opted out. And it's like, all right, well, if we go, are we in Baton Rouge or is it Tuscaloosa this year?
Baton Rouge.
And then, you know, it's like, well, you know, when we beat them, I want to beat them with their best guys.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously they're second, third strings. I mean, they're four or five or, you know, star guys as well, but the thing is they weren't the guys who were supposed to be starting, and, you know, and it just kind of feels like, all right, you know, and I think in a way that's kind of what Mississippi State also kind of took advantage of. Cause I don't think they had they lost as many guys.
Right. Yeah. So. LSU just like, they just, I don't know.
And yeah. Well, there's also the hangover too. I mean, you don't have Joe Burrow. I mean, it was just like, it was like Superstorm Sandy, you know, everything just kind of converged. All the planets and stars were aligned just right, just for that right. 1 year. And, you know, I just don't expect them to, I didn't expect them to repeat that kind of success, but I didn't expect them to exactly go out and lose to Mississippi State either. So yeah. Particularly at home, even if no one's there. So
what about Miami Clemson?
Clemson's going to kill them.
I agree.
Clemson, you say?
Clemson's going to kill him.
Yeah.
It's going to kill him.
I think. Why,
isn't it? Was it? I want to say it was in the teens, wasn't it? 13.5.
I can try to look at it. So. Clemson -15.
Okay, right in the middle. Yeah, they probably cover.
Yeah.
So I think. I mean, if you're Dabo, you know that the ACC, I mean, you got to put on, you know, you got to say the right things, but you know the ACC is not very good. And so if there's any program that you're going to line up and play against that sort of simulates quality, you got to go beat the tar out of them. And so Miami, I don't know really how good they are, but, you know, people are going to say, oh, they're a good team. And so, you know, Clemson has to go out and beat the snot out of them just for, I don't know, just for schedule credence.
Well, the biggest news that came out of Miami during the offseason when Derek King went there, right? We transferred from
Houston. Yeah. That and their star defensive tackle or end opted out, right? He's supposed to be a top 10 pick. He's not playing,
right.
I don't think.
Yep. But, yeah, the quarterback, you're right, transferred from Houston. So
I got a question back to the Alabama game. So with the weather being probably poor, what's the punting and / special teams impact that everybody thinks is going to happen?
Can't be worse.
We're going to have some safeties. Is there going to be a safety today? Somebody,
I don't know.
Hikes the ball over the end zone.
I think. You know, you could see anything, right? I wonder if this isn't a game. I think last week we talked about, you know, Ty Pirine not getting a shot, and, you know, we're playing the guy that sort of booms the punts, Sam. I wonder if this isn't the game you want the guy that can boot the hell out of the ball, because he's got to fight it through the wind, and maybe you don't get the, you know, the hang time and the coverage, but hell, we need it to go that way as far as we can get it, and we'll figure out the coverage. This might be a game where we try to do that. I mean, the higher up in the air you put it, the more subject it is to the wind. So maybe the line drives further down the field is what we need. That might be interesting. Yeah. Yeah, and the kicking, bets are off on that one.
If you're kicking with the wind, maybe you get like a 200 yard kick. Maybe it goes completely out of the end zone.
Yes.
Goodness.
Oh man.
Like, it hadn't come down yet. Landed in.
That's right. Do we call delay a game on the ball, or
all I want is just Waddle and Smitty to not be returning kicks. That's all I want.
Can you give us
punt Waddle and punts? That's fine. He's exceptional.
We'll take but Waddle just, and punts.
Just yeah. Please, not anybody else. Put Jace McClellan back there. I keep saying, put a fourth, fifth string running back who's built for the job, and that's their major contribution. Yeah. I don't get it.
Yeah, today, you know, put Miller Forrestall back there.
Oh. Stop it.
He's reliable.
He can fair catch it. That's fine. Yeah.
Well, actually, you know, Caleb, you know, when I listened to the audio of the Zoom call last week, because you brought up, because I remember you brought that up about Jalen. You didn't like the idea of him returning kicks. I think it was just punts, right? Not kickoffs. You didn't have a problem with.
No, punts, it's fine. I get it. Punts, but kickoffs. It's such an advantage, but kickoffs, I don't understand.
Kickoffs. The thing is, because what went into my mind, maybe I'm wrong. I'm, you know, way out there, but I'm just thinking, you know, the Iron Bowl was still in their heads. You know, what he did there right after, what was it, Smoke Monday, pick six. Mm-hmm. And then the ensuing kickoff, he just flew down and, you know, and then everyone, oh, you know, best return in the country. And they just kind of, you know, it's just in the staff's head. I don't know. Yeah. But
well, I could understand it more last year because he wasn't as critical a part of our offense, right? But now he's
– Oh, no, I agree with you. I agree with you there. So much, I'm just trying to figure out the thinking there that, you know, we kind of like fall into that trap that, hey, you know, magic happens, can happen every time this kid touches the ball, particularly on the on the return game. You know, and again, you go to the tape, the Iron Bowl, and there it is. Okay, we'll put him back there. But I'm not very comfortable with it myself.
But that could be a game decision too, right?
Exactly.
You know, the Auburn game. Let's put him back there against Auburn, but against you know, pick on Brian again. You know, UTC. You know, we don't need him back there on you. You know, like let's pick our spots, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Fellas, I gotta jump, but this has been a lot of fun. Roll Tide.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Roll Tide.
Absolutely.
Guys. All right, Caleb. Thanks meeting you, man.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. I don't know when Zoom's going to kick us off. The free Zoom is 40 minutes, and they seem to sort of grace us a little extra time.
Okay. We'll go. I've never been kicked off before. I haven't. Yeah. I don't know if anybody else. I've never been kicked off before.
Have you? Yeah. Well, no, that was just, it's just the one time I did it. I told you with my cousins and, you know, just that was it. Oh, okay. You know, unceremoniously kicked out.
Yeah.
But when I was gone, did you guys talk about the interview, Dave, that you had with?
No, we did not.
What was his name again? I forgot his name again.
Was it Nick? No.
Neil McCready.
Neil McCready.
That's right. Because, yeah, I thought that guy was really, like I wrote to you, Dave. I mean, he was really drinking the Lane Kiffin. Yeah, and you know, and I really have nothing against Ole Miss or anything like that, but I'm just like, wow, man, you want to be careful with that, you know? Not just because it's Lane Kiffin. I mean, that's a whole different story right there. But just the big signing or you know the big name coming to town. Everyone's looking to rescue the program. And I think he was right up to a point that it made Lane Kiffin makes Ole Miss relevant again. But, you know, the thing is how relative to what? The SEC, maybe, but the national stage. I mean, Ole Miss, they might have a good season every now and again, but they're not a blue blood. And I don't think that Lane Kiffin, you know, showing up is automatically going to make him that. And you know,
I think the relevant is that's important, right? But it's the sizzle, right? There's got to be something to it, right? And so you can be relevant and then not back it up, and then you know, and then it's sort of dust in the wind, you know. Saban, and I like sort of the parallel that, to a degree, like you said, that he drew, you know, Saban brought relevance, you know, after, you know, the Saban, the Shula era. And then he was able to back it up. There was substance there. And so does Lane have substance, or right now is it all sizzle? I don't know. I think that for a little bit, Neil, he made very clear to me when I asked if he'd be interested in interview. And frankly, that's before I remembered, you know, kind of who Neil was, but he made very clear, hey, I'm not an Ole Miss fan. I'm just a journalist that works in. I'm not a fan. And that was like the first thing. And I was like, oh, hell, he doesn't want to do an interview. And no one else responded. And I was like, okay, well, you know, I'll see if this guy will actually do it. And you know, it turns out he's, you know, I mean, I enjoyed the conversation with him and, you know, did a little bit of sort of background on who he was. He, you know, he's sort of a legit, you know, journalist. And what I think, sort of steering this back to the conversation, and I, you know, I'm gonna mention Colin Cowherd again, but one of the things that he says, is that he roots for interesting, that his job as a professional radio guy is not to necessarily root for a particular team. He roots for interesting. You know, he's made the comment this week, and Alabama fans jumped all over him that, you know, Alabama's not interesting because they just line up and beat the snot out of everyone. You know what? To me, that's interesting, but that doesn't sound national, right? And so I can see his point. And so if you take that sort of as a concept and you say Neil's rooting for interesting and Lane can be damn interesting. And that makes, you know, if you put yourself in sort of Neil's shoes or you know, a journalist following Ole Miss, then the job's a lot more fun. Whether they win or not, I don't know.
Oh,
but the job's a lot more fun.
Oh, wait, yeah, without. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you good. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that. I mean, that's a common thread you hear through journalists, and exactly that they're looking for interesting.
Yeah.
And you know, and of course, Lane Kiffin, given his history, he is interesting. I mean, how many guys were kicked out of FAU after he left because they weren't academic? I mean, right. Needless to say, I think that Ole Miss is somewhat of a conservative school, let's say. And, you know, how long are they going to put up with that? I mean, you know, he recruits guys, but kind of he has a reputation of recruiting some shady guys. And, you know, and that's going to be the story, I think. You know, yeah. I think that's the real headline. How long will Lane survive at Ole Miss?
Yeah. I think, you know, so to speak to that, I mean, Nick Saban brought credibility from an organizational management perspective. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had taken other teams to national championships and been successful in the NFL. Lane has not, but Lane has some success with quarterbacks. I mean, he's got offensive. I mean, he can lure an offensive type player, skill player, with that prospect of getting them to the pros. I think he has that kind of credibility. But does he have the credibility of managing a program yet? And that's what the athletic director and the president of the school is going to eventually need him to do.
Yeah,
I mean, the boosters are going to need him to, you know, win some games. It's just Mike Leach, right? It's the reason why Mike Leach stays at places and then has to move along is because he can't sustain success.
No, he can't.
He's interesting.
Well, that's just it. I mean, he's a character. I mean, the press loves him, right? You know, with his goofy stories, he makes everyone laugh, and you know, talking about, you know, what he can talk about anything. And then Mike Leach, but you know, Lane Kiffin, though, it is. I mean, he's that type of guy. I mean, everyone knows that one person where they don't have to do anything. Trouble just comes to them like they're kind of like a magnet for it, you know. And you know, Lane Kiffin is that guy. You know, he just. You know, whatever he tries to do right, you know, somehow or another, he winds up in trouble. And it just is, I mean, the entertainment value can't be beat. And I think that's, and he'll bring some good guys there, no question about it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to be competitive. They're not going to be the Ole Miss under. In fact, I think they'll probably be better than they were with Hugh Freeze.
Okay. I you know, there's an interesting sort of parallel, and both you guys were making comments that sort of, you know, does Lane Kiffin grow up to be Mike Leach or does he grow up to be Nick Saban? Because I think he has the talent. I think he has the talent and to do either. And so I think these next couple of years, because does he just become, you know, a fun loving offensive guy, or does he take the opportunity and the lessons that he's learned to really build out a full program, a full team, you know, more of the process side of it. That's going to be interesting.
Well, here's a question, just to piggyback on that. And that is, let's suppose that he enjoys some success there. How long does he stay at Ole Miss before other people start calling him up?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get a bigger program. I mean, I don't know who it could be, you know, but, you know, just for fun, you know, let's say Michigan does get rid of Harbaugh and they call up Lane. Is he going to say, no, I'm going to stay at Ole Miss, which is basically a middling, it's an SEC team, but it's a middling, it's basically an 8-win school, more or less. Or do you go to where you're going to get the real national recognition in Ann Arbor? So, I mean, you know, but that goes to what you're saying, his maturity level.
Yeah.
So
I think he'd have to show more of that maturity level for Michigan to take him. But your point is spot on.
I mean, I was just making a team up. I mean,
yeah. No, that's fair. Somebody. Does he go to a bigger program? That's interesting. I don't know. And then, I mean, it's easy to name a lot of programs that are higher profile than Ole Miss. But if he sort of builds them to a point, then I don't think that he would go to someone that's just a little bit better. He would want to make, what's the big step? You know, Dan Mullen wasn't going to go. He wasn't going to leave. I mean, it's Mississippi State, but he was having success at Mississippi State. He wasn't going to go to just anywhere. You know, he wasn't going to go to, you know, UCLA, or he wasn't going to go to, you know, even maybe a Miami, or he wasn't going to go to Arizona. He went to Florida, you know, and so that's a big step up. And so I think that, you know, if Lane's allowed to stay, then it would be a big step that he would make. And so what does that look like? I don't know. That might be very, very interesting.
I thought that was a great point, actually, using Dan Mullen there, because that's exactly how he got the recognition, by just building Mississippi State, again, you know, a middling SEC team. And all of a sudden, you know, the national spotlight is on him for the time that he was there. And the same thing is going to happen to Lane. And, if he achieves the same level of success that Mullen did across the way, there's some big program, bigger program that's going to show some interest. Yep. And, you know, if I'm the administration, I don't know if I can trust Lane to stay there very long if he actually gets, you know, gets some success down there.
Right.
So.
Right. No, that's cool. That's cool. Would you guys think of, go ahead.
Does he replace Nick?
Oh, hell no. Hell no.
I hope not.
No.
He would have to show a lot. He would have to show a lot.
He won't.
Sort of
he
won't. I don't think so. I don't think so either. Who does? Who's the name at the top of your head? If
Dabo.
We get someone next season. Talk on what
we do. I'm thinking Dabo or Pruitt.
Dabo goes to the pros for a couple of years and then lands back at the.
Wow, really? You think he's going to go to the pros?
I'm guessing. I don't know. I'm guessing. Yeah, I think he's probably curious.
Yeah, I mean, probably. I think, you know, and both of you guys, I mean, I don't know what the right answer is. I would throw Cristobal into that. I think that, you know, that might be the three, you know, Prue, Dabo, and Cristobal. And I was thinking last season, I was going to do something like, you know, an article or a podcast over it. And, you know, I spent most of last season thinking, you know, Cristobal would be the name that I would put up there. Pruitt, the way he finished last year and the way they're starting this year, I think sort of, you know, buoys his name up. Dabo, and Doug, you and I may have, you know, swapped some commentary on this. I don't know that he's the next guy, but he might be the guy after the next guy.
That's right. Yeah, we did talk about that. Yeah, yeah. I remember.
So I think there's some potential there. I think I don't know. I don't know where this thought came from, but what about Dabo at Texas?
Whoa. You know what? To be honest with you, I think anybody would love to have Dabo.
Yeah.
I mean,
you're just saying that he goes for the money because.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
You see the checks they're writing down there.
exactly.
Or just possibly the challenge, because
I think, I think that. I mean, you can argue that you can't do more at Clemson. You can't do more anywhere that you haven't done at Clemson, and so stay at Clemson, and that's a valid point. You could also reason that Texas is a blue blood program in the way that Clemson isn't and likely can't be. And so if you go to Texas, and then what if you own the state of Texas recruiting? I mean, damn, I don't know. I don't know where that thought sort of popped in my head this week, but
can I throw a little wrinkle into that?
Yeah, go for it.
And that is, all right, here's Dabo Swinney, and you know, little old Clemson. Everybody's beating up on little Clemson. We're just trying to win some football games and all that stuff.
Right.
But let's just pretend that – let's suppose that both Texas and A&M go after him. What does he do there? Do you go to A&M because it's a little bit more of that close-knit community type of thing that he seems to dig and thrive on, or do you go to a behemoth like Texas? I think that might play into any future. Now that I think about it, it might play into his future plans. You know, something that's a little bit more close knit, tight.
Yeah.
As opposed to just, like I said, some kind of behemoth like an Ohio State, Texas.
I think I hear what you're saying, and there's almost like a cult likeness to Texas A&M, right? And so he could come in with a bucket of Kool-Aid, and everyone's on board. So I agree with that. I think Texas is probably over themselves enough that they would play along. That's really? I do think that. And then if you take, you know, you're comparing apples to apples, Texas A&M and Texas, which of those two would you rather? Oh, you'd much rather be Texas. And then plus he can steal the Clemson template. I'm going to a conference that I can own, you know, competing for third position in a division. I can own this conference, you know, I'll give you season one, but season two, I'm going to own this thing. Cause what it's Oklahoma, right? It's a one horse race right now. He can be the second horse in that conference. And think if you're the big 12, right? Like the conference office wants to pay him. Because that gets the conference, it elevates the entire conference, and it makes it easier to get, you know, does the Big 12 make the playoff again? Well, hell yeah, it does. If Texas is there sort of, you know, running roughshod and it becomes, you know, the winner of that game almost gets an automatic berth. So,
yeah, true.
I don't know. Like I said, I don't know what planted that seed this week, but I just, you know, between a meeting, I thought, oh shit, what if that were to happen? So I don't know. There you have it.
Very interesting. Well, just as long as, you know, the one thing I'd be mindful of is if Nick Saban actually recommends somebody, because the last time that happened, well, was the guy who took me along to Alabama, Ray Perkins. It was Bear that recommended him. And not that Ray did a bad job. But actually, he was pretty successful down there. But of course, you know, you're coming on the heels of Bear Bryant, and like you were talking about before, you know, you don't want to be the guy after,
right? But you know, think about if you're Saban, right, and you've built this thing up, and like truly, he has built something up, right, and just like every sort of button and lever all over the place, he has built this thing up. He wants to hand those keys. He wants to, you know, he wants to pick who he hands those keys to, I think. And then I think there's probably an intentionality within the program that says the model that Saban has created, we want someone who knows how to run this model. We don't want a guy that can just go drive a car. We want a guy that can drive this finely tuned stick shift sports car, right? We don't want, you know, some yobob sort of burning out the transmission on this thing. We want someone who knows the precision timing on how to, you know, they're not learning how to coach on this machine. And so I think it probably is someone who's had some success. I do think it's someone that has spent time in the Knicks system. And I think he will have a lot of sway in picking who that is.
Going along with that, does that mean you throw Kirby in the mix? Not that he would do it.
Prove it.
You know, you'd have to put him on the list, but no,
we wouldn't do it, but you would have, exactly. That's the answer I was looking for. You'd have to put him on the list.
You'd have to think about it, but if you're Kirby, you know, I mean, he played at Georgia. And he's had all of the success. You know, if you're Pruitt, even if you have that next level of success, you grew up hating Tennessee, you know? Exactly. And so if he can get out of there, he's going to get out of there. Georgia, you know, Georgia and Kirby, he grew up loving the dogs. And so, so he wouldn't leave. And so, and then plus I think Alabama fans wouldn't want Kirby right now in the way that they would accept Pruitt.
No,
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I know we've run longer than the 40 minutes and we haven't been kicked off. I'm good to go a few more minutes if you guys want to.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. I'm all right.
What did you guys think about? I'm going to ask, you brought this up. What did you guys think about the Neil McCready interview? What do you guys think about the interviews in general?
So I love them. I love them. That's just like, it's a great, great addition to it.
Okay.
I love hearing the opposite side kind of give any insight to what their way they see the game going, because it's just so much that I get, you know, Alabama, you know, rose or crimson colored glasses kind of thing, you know. And so I love it. And you've done a good job. I mean, that's what I was going to say. I mean, even these Zoom calls, Dave, I mean, I was looking forward to this thing all week long. And, you know, I appreciate that.
Cool.
And what I was thinking is if you need, like, in the podcast, anybody to give you, like, you know, testimonials to kind of, like, help people understand what you're going, I'd be more than happy to do that.
I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it. If you have, so, all right, I'm going to, I'll say that. If you have not given an iTunes, or I don't know if you've downloaded on iTunes or another, if you haven't given a review there, then do that. I mean, if you have, then, you know, then that's cool.
You
can't do it twice.
Yeah, no, I love the interviews. It's like we talked about, Dave. I mean, it has been just that, you know, just a perfect addition to the to the pod. And you know, just like Caleb was saying, and I second that, and I think I might have even said it to you. It's always, in fact, I remember exactly what I said to you. It's good to get a view outside the Bama bubble. And I just, one of the things I really love about it is the fact that it's just the love of the game. You know, you can talk to these guys, you know, they're reporting or they're cheering for their team that we're about to beat the crap out of. But still, I mean, you know, it's just a friendly, you know, it's just about ball.
Yeah.
You know, there's no haymakers being thrown. Right. Verbal ones, you know.
We might challenge that this week. I've already got the I've already got the Georgia show lined up.
Oh.
So just when we thought those might be friendly interviews, we'll see how this one goes. And you know, not that you want to hear me complain, but this one is booked for Tuesday night, and I typically
Tuesday or Thursday.
Yeah.
Oh no, you're talking about, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was going to say the opponent shows so far, I've done those, you know, Wednesday or Thursday, which gives me a little more time in the week to prep for them. And so this is going to be Tuesday. And so I might need to pull an all-nighter at some point to do some prep for that one. But that's going to be a big one. And then the fact that we're recording on Tuesday means that it'll come out a lot earlier. So, you know, Tuesday night or Wednesday morning, that show will come out. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
And I just want, probably speaking for Caleb and the other guys too, Travis and Nick, when I asked the question, where the hell do you find the time, Dave, to do all this stuff? Where do you find the time?
Well, it is a challenge. Fortunately, there's no one here from work, is there? So sometimes I carve out a little bit of time.
Okay. Gotcha.
In the day to, or I try to make a hard stop at, you know, six o'clock so I can, you know, do some prep or whatever it is. But, I'm hoping it gets easier because I think I said to you, Doug, when we were talking kind of over the summer, like, I want to do some of these things, but I don't know where the time comes from, for all of this. And so, I've put together, again, Caleb's not here, so he can't laugh at me. But I put together again another sort of low tech. You guys can't see this, but you can't see it. But I've got like every day of the week what I need to do to support. So I've added some process. Saban's taught me. So I've got every day of the week and what I need to do that day, you know, to sort of maintain a schedule. And I've got this right now. It runs all the way through October the 25th. What I need to do every day to sort of keep the train between the wheels. And so far, knock on wood, that has helped keep me on schedule. And it has sort of managed the overwhelm a little bit. Like if I can get this one thing done, that's the one thing that needs to happen today or this afternoon or whatever it is. So, So we'll see, you know, check back, you know, week eight,
you know? You know, Dave, you like last season, you and Tom would talk a lot about how we need to, you know, we have the ups and the downs, but we need to enjoy being Alabama fans, especially with the success we have.
Yes.
And, you know, with McCready's interview, I thought I've enjoyed all of them, but like with his too, and he's talking about how great the powder blue jerseys are. It's like, well, yeah, but that's just a flavor of the week thing. Like they're, you know, they're trying and they're trying to get their program going, but there's, I guess not as much, I guess it's not quite as enjoyable when you got to talk about jerseys trying to attract kids to come into play.
Right. Right.
And they all do it. I mean, they all do it. I mean, just look at Oregon. I mean, try to keep out their uniforms, man.
Crazy.
Well, I think, you know, I think
it's what kids look for these days, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
Well, a little bit of that. And then what's going to get you that, you know, that next bit of attention. Right. And so, you know, if it's a sportscaster that says, man, those are really sweet uniforms, then as a player, like, I want to wear a sweet uniform. And so what is that next thing that's going to be said or happen that's going to get, you know, the coach on, you know, the Dan Patrick show, or that's going to get to help sort of get the brand out there? Because it really is, it is about, you know, branding. It is about juice. It is about, you know, and getting the kids. And the more that's sort of sticking to the wall, the easier it is to, and the more content you have, you know, from a recruiting standpoint. So it's,
well, that doesn't mean you're working on, they're not going to charge you to work with designs for a new uniform for the Tide, right?
Who, me? No. No, we don't need to change. We don't need to change ours.
No,
I don't think so.
Yeah.
No, I think the day that the Tide changes the jerseys is the day the Yankees allow names on the back of their jerseys. I mean, it's just
right.
Well, you know, they let Johnny Damon grow his hair out at one point, didn't they?
Yeah.
Did they
make him?
Well, that's because Steinbrenner wasn't around anymore. You had to die for that.
No, you're right, Travis. I don't want us to you know, yank with uniforms and stuff like that. And think, you know, thank goodness we have sort of enough program juice that we don't.
Well, that's just it. We got substance. We don't need to try, you know, you prove yourself on the field.
Yeah.
And you absolutely don't need to have all those other fancy things to try to attract.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, because actually when I was thinking a little bit about that during the interview with McCready there, and then, the relevance thing. And, you know, when he was made mention of, you know, Nick coming, and made Bama relevant again. And I was like, well, and I thought to myself, man, all right, I suppose he's got a point somewhat, because Bama's already a blue blood to begin with. I mean, as soon as they start getting some success, boom, they're right back there in the national attention again. Ole Miss hasn't been there.
Right. Right.
So, I mean, you know, it's uncharted waters for them. Yeah. as opposed for Bama. And I guess everybody has their time wandering in the wilderness at some point.
Right.
But,
you know, and I agree, right. We had much less further to go. Right. And so, and then look at where we are, but there was some staleness, you know, with Shula, right. There was some staleness with, you know, with Franchione. It had been 17 years between, you know, titles, those kinds of things. And so, And so it was easy. Now, I always say Alabama's a buoyant program, because look at the coaches under which we've won 10 games. You know, Shula, you know, won 10 games. DeBose won 10 games. Franchione won 10 games. And these are some of the worst coaches, you know, in the program history. And they've won 10 games. And you go to some programs and they can count their 10 win seasons, you know, with their hands. Right. And we've got, you know, somebody falling off a turnip truck winning 10 games, right? So there's some buoyancy to the program. And so when you get the right captain at the helm, it's a rocket ship. And I hope the administration appreciates that now, maybe in a way that they didn't 15 years ago.
Mm. You know, the funny thing about Shula, you know where he was last year?
He was Giants, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he was the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, yeah. But he's done well in the NFL. He's done really well.
Oh, yeah.
He's coached a lot of different, you know, teams there. So it's interesting, you know, that he's had that level
of success because he's put together, you know, a pretty good career as an OC in the NFL. But I don't know. I don't know. So let me do this. This was on a topic, on a topic list, that I put out. And I'll tell you like a little backstory. So I'm thumbing through, you know, Facebook, you know, kind of like you do, and you get ads that pop up and, you know, mostly you ignore them. And so, there's a couple of whiskey brands, a couple of bourbon brands that I've liked. And so I'm profiled, you know, for those types of products. And of course, Alabama football, I'm profiled for, you know, those types of products. And so you get a lot of sort of ads that way. And this ad popped up, on my screen. And it's for a tumbler. It's for a glass, and it's a blown glass. And if this sounds like an ad, it kind of is a little bit. but it's like the slickest thing that I've seen in a week. And so I was like, oh, not only am I going to buy some of those, but I need to see, is there any sort of deal that we can get, you know, for them to advertise or sponsor or, you know, a discount for, you know, people that are equally as interested. And so I just emailed them, or messaged them, emailed them. And so I had a conversation with the guy who runs the company yesterday. And so, what we're going to do. And if you go to, it's legendsdrinkware.com, and what it's these, and next week I'm going to have one. So Thursday night when we do the Zoom, I'm going to have one and you'll be able to see it. They're out of Portland, Oregon. So they do right now two college teams. It's Oregon and they do Alabama. And it's a, it's like a three-dimensional script A in the bottom of the glass. And so as you're drinking it, you know, you can, and it's pretty darn slick. And so what they're going to do is they're going to send me a couple of them. So you guys will see it on the camera, next Thursday, and they're going to do, a 10% discount. So they're going to give like a code and a 10% discount for listeners, and they're going to do a giveaway. It's probably two or maybe three sets that they're going to do as a giveaway. And so all of this I'm going to do on sort of the public broadcast, but podcast. But you guys are going to be able to cheat a little bit. The first question or topic that they want to throw out there and sort of get the best story for. And the guy was really, he really had a vision of, you know, the first giveaway, we want to hear the best Bryant Denny stories. And so sort of your best experience or your best story, with Bryant Denny. If you haven't been to Tuscaloosa and been to Bryant Denny, then, you know, give us, you know, sort of a TV sort of watching, you know, sort of best story where you felt, you know, most connected. And sort of the spirit is, and this, that he was sharing is, you know, football's back. It's been this 2020 has been this crazy season. And so, you know, what's a moment that sort of brings people together and sort of bonds people. And so that is the question that will be, the contest question for the first glass or for the first sort of giveaway. But if that's something as a product that may not interest you, and I respect that, if it's as a product, if that does interest you, go to the legendsdrinkware.com, but don't buy it today. and you might want to, because we'll have a discount, we'll have a discount code for you. And, you know, kind of sharing that here now, what we'll do is we'll add that to the podcast. It will be a little bit sort of addy, like it's legit, man. I saw that and I was like, oh shit, that is like the coolest thing I've seen this week. And so,
yeah. And Christmas is coming up, right? Exactly.
There you go.
I think you solved it.
There you go. When you go to the website, don't be discouraged because Oregon will be the first cup that they show. They're in Portland, so all right, we'll give them that. Alabama was the first college team that they got, and then they've done Oregon because they're and then they've got a whole slew of teams that they're about to add, but it is, and then they do a pint glass if you prefer, you know, the pint glass, beer glass. And it has the same A in the bottom of it. And then they do the tumbler, a 10-ounce tumbler, which is pretty slick too. So, but more to come on that. But you guys have a head start on, preparing for, an opportunity to win a contest.
So what did you ask him if they're based out of Portland, they picked, you know, Oregon, why is Alabama the only other school they started with?
Well, that's a great question. And he shared the story on that. He said, now I don't know if he was just you know, saying, you know, because he was talking to me, but he said that they wanted to do something college football related, that they wanted to get into that, and that he wanted a we've used the term blue blood. He did as well. That he said, if we can't get Alabama, then we're not going to get into the college market. And I don't know if he was just saying that to me or not, but he said, we want to go after the iconic programs that obviously have a big fan base. They're trying to sell products, but iconic programs with, you know, truly dedicated, you know, fans that would have an interest in something like that. And so if you, and I was tooling their website the other day, they've got, you know, Georgia's upcoming, FSU. There's a handful of programs that are sort of next in queue. But yeah, you know, this, as he reported, you know, as he relayed to me that, that it was Alabama, given sort of our stature in college football and the size and passion of the fan base.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a whiskey guy. So well,
there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, I'll have to send it to my parents in Florida.
But, yeah.
But
just the Southeast is a lot of whiskey drinking, a lot of bourbon drinking.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. The brown liquor flows.
Yeah. They're doing Kentucky. So think about, boy, that's, I don't know if it matches. You know, you think of Kentucky basketball, especially, right? I don't know if it gets any better, yeah, sort of matching that. But you're right. A lot of bourbon, a lot of brown water in the South. And so pick some of the big programs there. And it's a, you know, like I said, next week I'm going to have one in my hand. Next Thursday I'm going to have one in my hand. I'm super excited about that. I might be deploying it. I might have one for show and one in action. But we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I think that's going to be pretty cool. And in full disclosure, it's a 10%, you know, there'll be a code. And so a 10% discount, you know, for you guys using it. And then so I'll get a 5% commission. And so it's a win for everybody, right? They're selling product and we're getting some advertising. You guys are getting a super cool product at a lower price. So, but check it out. It's pretty cool.
How many glasses do you get? One, two, three, four?
I think I'm getting two. And then I did ask them, you know, for the contest, you know, what does that look like? And it'll be a pair okay, of glasses. So that'll be nice. They're not, I mean, you know, nice rock glasses, you know, they price, you know, kind of all over the place. And so they're not super cheap. I think they're $48 a piece. So they're not super cheap. But, you know, if you're going for a nice rock glass, it's, you know, is this looks like it'll be a nice rock glass. So we'll see. More to come on that. But I wanted to share that with you guys first.
Cool. And that could be a topic for next time is what's the favorite brown liquor? Yeah. Or brown water you put in there.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Get some recommendations going on.
Yep. We could definitely talk about that.
Actually, you know,
I'm sorry, Travis, go ahead.
Well, you mentioned brown liquor. I'm from California. So, you know, there's all kinds of alcohol here available 24/7. You don't need to go to special stores or anything like that. One time I was in Tennessee and I was at somebody's house and they told me, yeah, we're in a dry county. And then they went out to the garage and brought these mason jars with this shit they bought out of somebody's trunk of their car. With the sentence. I go, it was moonshine, right? I'm like, what's the point, right? If you could just buy it, go to the store. But anyway,
so I only laugh because I have a story like that too.
No, what is it? I want to hear.
Well, I mean, this guy brought out corn whiskey and I'd never tried this stuff. And I drink it. It's the nastiest stuff I've ever had in my life. And the next day, all I can taste is corn. I mean, it was horrible. It's horrible to have corn in your mouth in Sunday church. I mean, I brushed my teeth 6 times and I still tasted it.
Oh, man. That's funny. I lived in, out of school, I lived in outside of St. Louis for a little bit. So I lived in Missouri a little bit. And, you know, coming from the South, like you said, you know, dry counties and, you know, liquor stores, especially think of Alabama, right? You have to go to a, you know, state stores or state, you know, you have to go to a liquor store to buy. And so I go to live in Missouri a little bit and, you know, go into the grocery store and they have a liquor aisle in the grocery store. You go to a gas station. This was nuts. You go to a gas station and you're used to going to a gas station and you see back behind sort of the counter, all the cigarettes, right? And so, you know, give me a pack or whatever. They had that, and then they had a full like shelves of miniature liquor bottles, not like the, but the, like the miniatures, you know, to get one to go. And I was like, man, that is crazy.
When I first moved to Texas, it was, there was no open container law. So wow. We would go home from work and stop at the C store and pick up a, you know, can of beer.
Yeah.
And you could drink it on the way home. You just couldn't be drunk. And so, right. You know,
wow.
There's some logic to it, but then there's obvious logic against it. So.
Well, not to be left out, but you know, moonshine, when I first moved over here, moonshine was pretty prevalent, but it had more to do with it because the taxes are so damn high.
Yeah.
On the liquor, and everybody had a guy. You didn't know who the guy was, but everybody had a guy, and you put in your order like on a Monday and Friday afternoon, you get like a 5 liter.
Oh, wow.
Like a 5 liter bucket, you know, and it's like, all right, there's a weekend. And you just hope and pray that, you know, you still be able to see after your first swig of it.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, seems like we've all been down that road, and you know, one form or another.
Yep. All right.
But actually, you know, just one quick question for all you guys, because you made me think about it, Dave. We were talking about the glasses, and because one thing that I've always thought is, you know, when I'm traveling, you know, through Atlanta or, you know, back to New York or on the way down to Florida, whatever, that relative to Bama's success, that the fan base, although it's big, is not as big as one would think. And that, you know, somewhat like a Notre Dame is bigger. I mean, they always pack it in wherever they go. That's why every bowl in the world wants them. And I just wondering if you guys feel the same way, or, you know, am I, you know, off on that?
I don't know. It's not my experience. So I'm always shocked because I spend most of my time in the Southeast, but I've had jobs where I've traveled to Europe. I've traveled in the Northeast. Like one time I was in Wrigley, I was at Wrigley Field watching Boston and the Yankees play, and I'm wearing my Alabama hoodie and somebody hollers Roll Tide down the concourse area. And I've been in France and I've been like in Paris airport and have it happen. I mean, I don't know, maybe it's more a function of just, you know, being in heavily traveled areas. But, you know, well, I get a Roll Tide, you know, out of the blue sometimes.
I usually go every year to London for one of the NFL games, particularly if the Giants are playing, of course. And then, but if the Giants aren't playing, and then, you know, I just go in Bama gear, basically. Mm-hmm. And I always get a Roll Tide. But it was a couple of times in Stockholm, you know, maybe I had this on me or something else. And then all of a sudden, a war eagle came my way.
There's always one, right?
There's always one. You had to laugh at it, right? You know, but it was just.
I don't know. I think Notre Dame and like in a Michigan, I think historically, they have more graduates than.
I mean, they're huge schools, of course. Yeah.
So I think that sort of plays in. You know, Notre Dame is pretty intentional about playing on both coasts. You know, when they can own their schedule, you know, they're going to play Navy or they're going to play USC, and they alternate years so that they're on one coast, at least one coast, you know, every year. And so I think that not recruiting, but they market, you know, nationally. I think Saban is certainly recruiting nationally, but I don't know that we market the program nationally. I also think that, you know, there's a reality of it, right? You know, Southern football, you know, nationally maybe doesn't play. And whatever you want to say about, you know, Alabama nationally, some people are going to, you know, not think about that in the same way that they might think about, you know, a Midwestern Northern school. So I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you might be right about that. I mean, just, you know, just a funny little anecdote, because I said that, you know, when I was introducing myself, that, you know, in the Northeast and college football was kind of hard to come by and all that. And I remember I played corner in high school, and it was after, I might've told you this already, Dave, but you know, we were getting ready for.
So could you cover Lane Kiffin? I'm sorry. I just have to jump in. Could you cover Lane Kiffin?
Easy. No problems.
Okay, all right. There we go. Okay, we're covered.
And it was just so funny because we're getting ready to play a team, you know, the week before. And then just before we started off with offense first, and then, you know, coach is like, all right, you know, the team we're going to be playing, they run the wishbone. You know, does anybody else know who runs the wishbone? And I just automatically, at that time, it was 86, 87. I was just like, Oklahoma. You're like, yeah, all right. Then after practice, like a few guys came up to me. He's like, how did you know that? I was like, what do you mean? How do I know that? Doesn't everybody watch you? You know? So, I mean, that just, you know, what you're saying, you know, playing nationally, you know, is, you know, they're, you know, definitely the Northeast, you know, is kind of left out a little bit. I mean, the biggest program we got, what, Syracuse and Army?
Yeah. Right. Absolutely.
I mean, I wouldn't say I'm in Central California. I mean, I wouldn't say I encounter very many Alabama fans. It's just, you know, it's not as common out here. People want, this is Pac-12 country though. It's a joke.
Oh. No, that's right.
It is.
Wow.
Clint, what number are you rocking there? I know you've got the white. What number are
Mac Jones. I got 10. I'm number 10.
Okay. So
it's actually AJ. It's of AJ Bakaren vintage.
Okay.
But it's funny how these numbers. I've got Mark Ingram / Najee Harris.
Right. So
these. It's funny how these numbers.
They rotate back through, right?
Yeah.
Actually, that's interesting too, because when the new NCAA rules come out, right, the image and likeness, does that mean you're going to be able to play buy the jerseys with the names on the back of the guys?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if you, especially at a school like Alabama, where the so many of the different numbers are so many of the different, you know, historical players, I think. You know, I think they absolutely will put the names on them, and you know, and AJ McCarron, when he sees a 10 walking around, he'll have to check the back where he hasn't in the past.
What's the rule you're talking about there, Doug?
Well, the NCAA, I mean, they passed the image and likeness where the players can basically make money off of their names and likeness and video games, merchandise, you know, that type of stuff. So, because as it is now, you know, if you get a number 10, like Caleb's got on, you can't put Jones on the back of it. Even right. If your last name is Jones, it doesn't matter.
So Clint, yours doesn't have a name on the back, right?
No.
Oh, Clint. Sorry. I said Caleb. Sorry.
No, it doesn't have one. It's just blank. Yeah. All of mine are blank. I don't have any with any names on it. I presume you could do it, but it's kind of like secondhand thing. It's not going to be the official stuff.
So. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anybody with a silk screen machine could probably put whatever you want on it, but yeah. But no, it's not.
Yeah, I got a crimson one. I put my old high school number and put my name on the back, and just like you said there, Clint, you know, it's, you know, it's just kind of like a screen job.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
cool. All right. Well, hey guys, this has been any sort of last topics or questions. This ran longer, which is great. I would have thought Zoom would have killed us off by now, but hey.
Well, how about if we ended on predictions?
Yeah, there we go.
Final score.
Yeah, why don't we walk around? Why don't you kick us off, Doug?
I'm going to say 52-37.
Okay.
I'm going to go with I'm feeling 35-14, lower score.
35-14. Is that weather induced or did you think
it happened anyways? Wait. I have to revise that because I didn't take the hurricane into account. come back to me.
I think the clock is going to go a little bit faster than normal games. I don't think they're going to get as many plays.
Yeah. Hey Travis, what do you think?
42-13.
42-13. Nick, I think you indicated you're at a place where you can't do audio. You know, I was thinking this was – I can't remember what I said in the pregame or, you know, the Texas A&M, but I thought we might be sort of mid-50s, and then they might sort of be mid-20s. But I think the weather is going to tamp that down. I think we might get to you know, we might get to the 40s. And I think they probably, you know, they might be upper teens. So, you know, maybe do the math in my head. They might have 17, they might have 21. I mean, that's kicks though in the weather. We might get to 38. So maybe 38, 18, something like that. So I don't know.
It'll be, I'm going to revise 35, 24.
35, 24. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, more like an Army Navy game.
So you have us, I won't say nervous, but you have us on edge all the way through then.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I mean, I kind of forgot about the weather.
Right.
So, thanks for Clint.
I agree. So if it wasn't a bad, if it had clear skies, it would be a shootout. It's going to be 70, it would be 70 points total.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I think the original, there was a book in Vegas that put the, and I sort of skimmed an article, they interviewed and, they had put the line out at 79.9 and then almost had sort of an oh no moment when they realized, oh, that's going to be right during the storm. And I think between them shifting the line and the bettors pulling down the line, I think it dropped like 12 points, which that's a big drop.
Yeah.
And so, man, there's some bettors out there that loaded up on that at 79. Holy cow. They're just, they're already spending that money.
Yeah.
Well, even those boat races though. I mean, what are they thinking about? I mean, you know, I mean, Bama's secondary isn't that bad.
Right. Right.
I mean, I can understand it could be a shootout maybe for the first half, maybe.
I think they're thinking that Alabama would cover most of that spread.
Excellent point. Sold.
Well, if Alabama gets in the mid-50s, right, then you know, we don't need a whole lot. You wouldn't need a whole lot from Ole Miss. So, but yeah, I think I don't think we get there with the weather. So we'll see. But
yeah.
All right. Well, hey guys, this has been a great deal of fun.
This has been awesome.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. And this was, you know, Clint, tell me what you think. This was similar to last week, you know, getting to know some fellow Alabama fans, talking ball, talking the game, talking, you know, just you know, a little bit of whatever. And
it was even better. It was even better.
Even better? Is that because Charlie's not here?
Yeah, mainly. No, it was.
Is this turning into the Feinbaum show?
No. What it is is that we got to the talking of the ball. We did more analysis. I like that part.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair.
We spent a lot of time on introductions, which was just a one-time thing.
Right. No, that's fair. Well, last year is like, who are all these guys? Or last week, you know? And so
Yeah.
It's all good. But yeah, I'm hoping that you know, we'll have a core group of regulars and you know, and hopefully some additional folks will join us. And but yeah, I agree. We kind of got into the stuff a little faster. So that's cool. But this has been a lot of fun. I told you guys last week, I didn't know what the hell to expect, you know, doing this. And so it has been, you know, so much more fun than I was expecting. And then these on Saturday morning, you know, Doug, the virtual tailgate, I think is awesome. So yeah. No, I don't know what Thursday night will be, sort of the virtual
visit. Well, you know what? Actually, I was just thinking because I'm working the evening shift this week coming up. So I might be able to jump on for about half hour. It's 2 o'clock in the morning for me, but I get in at 1. So,
okay.
You know, all right. So maybe I can jump on there a little bit.
Fantastic. Well, Travis and Nick, thanks for joining us. Nick, I know you joined the All America group. I can talk about Nick and he can't respond, right? So yeah. Nick signed up for the All America group to join, I'll get my days wrong, but I think he did it last Thursday or Friday, just right before. And so I think the timing probably didn't work out, but he was able to join us today, so that's phenomenal. And hopefully you guys can join us Thursday night. And we'll hang out and talk some more ball, and talk about you know, scores and predictions coming true on the Ole Miss game. So, all right, you guys have a great Saturday. I'd say Saturday morning for some of you guys. Saturday, I don't know, it's almost Saturday night where you are, Doug. So
yeah, almost 6 o'clock. It's almost time. Well, Florida's playing now, right?
There you go.
In 5 minutes.
Coming up.
There you go.
All right, fantastic. All right. Thanks, gentlemen. Have a good one.
All right, great. We'll catch up. All right, thanks so much. Love it.
Roll Tide, guys.
Roll Tide.